They saw his stunned expression. "What's the matter?" his brother asked.
"I just saw a gray," Tony said.
"What?" they chorused, jumping up.
"I just saw a gray," Tony repeated.
"Where?" his brother asked.
"Outside," he said.
Everybody ran outside. They turned on all the lights and began searching the entire property. Tony was surprised to see one of the children walk over to exactly where the gray had been standing. He could still see the trail the gray made in the grass. He showed his family. They were both excited and nervous to see how close the gray was to their house. They took flashlights and followed the trail, but the gray was gone.
Tony, however, was still reeling.
"It just stood there," says Tony.
"Why did it stand there for so long?"
30 or 40 seconds is not a long time, but in that setting, it's kind of a long time. Any animal wouldn't stick around that long. The headlights come on, and if it was a deer or some kind of animal, it would have been gone. But there was no mistaking what this was. It was really close. Despite being next to the gray, Tony cannot recall its face.
"I don't remember any facial features," he says, "not even its eyes.
And it was facing me, because it turned around and went off." Despite being unable to remember its face, Tony felt a strange kinship to the being. As they both stood there and stared at each other for so long, it was almost like there was some kind of message it was trying to communicate.
"That's always bothered me," Tony says. "I just couldn't understand why was it standing there so long. And I had the thought, I know him. And he knows me. Maybe it didn't run because I know it. And he knows me."
That's the feeling that I got. Inside, they found the family dogs cowering under the beds, where they remained for the next 2 days. Tony's brother doesn't like to talk about such things as ETs, but for Tony, this particular experience had far-reaching and profound consequences.
"It changed me," Tony says.
"It's changed my life. To be that close to something that is not from here, it's changed the way I think and feel. I don't know how else to explain it except to say that it's on my mind, not constantly, but a lot. I think about these things a lot of the time." There are parts of his experiences that Tony doesn't talk about much. "Sometimes I am a little bit hesitant to say this, but I have a feeling that I may have lived on another planet, in another form, in a past life. When I'm in the shower, I look down at my legs. They don't look right, like my knees are supposed to bend the other way. Where does that come from? Am I out of my gourd or what?" Another thing he doesn't like to talk about is his daughter. He does have a son, on Earth. But he also has memories of a daughter who he calls his star daughter. Even to talk about her makes him choke up.
"I have a daughter who's out there. I know I've seen her once at least. I don't remember the circumstances it was that I got to see her, or anything else connected with her, except that she's not entirely human. There are times when I feel her. I don't know what that means, but I know it's her. I just feel her. I don't know if it's thought transference or if she is actually near. I don't know."
He once saw a drawing of an alleged hybrid ET and was amazed to see that it matched his memory of his daughter exactly. His contacts with ETs have left Tony with a unique perspective of life on Earth. "I have been and still am confused when it comes to things going on here on Earth," he says. "I really have no way to explain this, but I have a completely different look on this planet. It is only one of many and there is life everywhere. If everybody could understand and realize that we are just a very small part of a gigantic universe, full of life. There are things all around us that we might not be able to see." Chapter 2, Pat's Gift. Born in 1943, Pat Katz grew up in Key West, Florida. One day, when Pat was about 4 or 5 years old, her grandparents took her to the circus, an event that she enjoyed immensely. That night she was staying with her grandparents. Pat went to bed in a second-story bedroom. Looking out the window as she was falling asleep, she was shocked to see a pale, gray-skinned being, bald with large dark eyes, staring at her from outside. "I thought something followed us home from the circus," Pat says. "It was watching me. No communication, just watching me." She ran downstairs and told her grandparents.
They took her back upstairs and pointed out that it was a two-story house and she was on the second floor. There was no way she could have seen anybody. It must have been her imagination. Pat now recognizes the figure as a typical gray. But back then, with no reference for what she had seen, she didn't know what to think. The only thing she knew, she hadn't imagined it. About 1 year later, at age 6, Pat started to feel weak and ill. Her mother took Pat to the doctor. The diagnosis was devastating. Pat, the doctors said, had leukemia. The worst part for Pat were the needles and constant blood tests. Strangely, right when she was about to begin treatment, the leukemia disappeared. The doctors were unable to account for it. Pat had been very sick. All the tests were positive for leukemia. 3 weeks later, she was perfectly healthy. Pat's family assumed there must have been some sort of miraculous healing. Nobody could explain it. Now that Pat was well again, nothing more was thought about it. A few years later, when Pat was 7 or 8 years old, she was playing in the woods across the street, something she had often done. Suddenly something very strange happened to her. All I remember is everything lit up and it was a couple of hours later. I went home. I didn't know what had happened to me. I thought I had seen God or something. Time marched on. Before long, Pat was out of school and out on her own. While working as a cocktail waitress, Pat also had aspirations of becoming an actress. She and another friend, also a hopeful actor, would often go on auditions together, or other times, would just go out to eat or socialize, together. It was during these trips together they began to have a problem with missing time. I used to get off work and I would go pick her up, Pat says. And we would go to Orlando. And we never got there. We'd wake up on the side of the road. We had gone to sleep and woke up in the car and never got anywhere. That used to happen quite regularly, a half dozen times. We kept saying, "We're not having any fun." At the time, the idea of missing time was a foreign concept. And despite her childhood encounters, she did not connect the missing time incidents to UFOs. "If you had told me back then that there were aliens and UFOs," she says, "I would have thought you were crazy." On March 28, 1969, President Eisenhower passed away from congestive heart failure. 1 year earlier, he had suffered a series of 4 heart attacks. At the time, Pat was listening to the radio and heard the tragic news. Suddenly a voice came into her head, telling her that Eisenhower would remain alive for 6 months, a prediction which turned out to be true. The voice also told her that when she heard about an occult class being taught in Miami, she was to sign up for the class. 1 week later, Pat was driving to work when she heard an advertisement about the class on the radio. Remembering the voice, she decided to sign up. To her surprise, the class opened up a whole new world for her. She learned about out-of-body experiences, which she began having. She learned about her past lives. In June of 1969, at age 26, Pat had a vision that a plane was going to crash on 36th Street in downtown Miami. At the time she worked as a cocktail waitress at the Miami Holiday Inn. She mentioned the event to her co-workers. "They teased the crap out of me," Pat says. "And then a plane crashed on 36th Street. It was a DC-4 cargo plane. 11 people were killed." By this time, Pat was used to psychic events. One evening while working at the hotel bar, a man came in and sat at the bar. Pat was looking through a pair of tarot cards that somebody had given to her. "Why don't you read my fortune?" the man asked. "I don't know how to use the tarot cards," Pat said. Suddenly the name Margaret popped into her head. "Who's Margaret?" she asked. "That's my wife." More images flooded into her mind's eye. "You've got 2 little boys. One of them fell off a stone wall and hurt his knee, but he's not hurt bad." The man confirmed the story and impressed, he decided to test her ability and asked her what he just got in the mail. "Boxes and boxes of paper from somebody named Martin," Pat replied, simply relaying the information that popped into her mind. "Martin's my boss," the man said. The man explained that he worked at Eastern Airlines, and they were installing computers, which involved a lot of paperwork. One night, Pat had a dream that a crazy lady stabbed her in the back with scissors. The next day, while driving to work, somebody hopped into the back seat of her car. It was the crazy lady from her dream. The lady asked Pat to drive her to the bus station, which Pat did. She then called the police, who apprehended the woman. Pat learned she was an escaped inmate who was, in fact, armed with a pair of scissors. It was one event after another. One day she was driving home and a voice yelled stop. At that moment, a vehicle ran the stop sign of the intersection, moving at high speed. On another occasion, a man sitting at the bar had the ghost of his aunt relay a message. Before she could stop herself, Pat began to berate the man for stealing his aunt's inheritance, and then described his aunt in detail. The man fled. There were also weird coincidences. Like the time she sat next to Bud Hopkins on a plane. More psychic events would continue. One evening, while taking the psychic occult class, which was scheduled during night hours, Pat came home. As she went inside, she was surprised to see two small beings. Each had round eyes, a small mouth and nose, and a big elongated skull. They couldn't pass for human, Pat says. One was light-colored and the other was a lighter gray, or tan. And if I tell you what it was dressed in, you're going to think I'm crazy. It was dressed in a roaring 20s kind of zoot suit. It was trying not to scare me. I looked at it, at the outfit. I knew it was projecting what it was wearing because it was trying not to scare me. Although the tactic was bizarre, it worked like a charm. I wasn't scared of it, and it asked me to do a favor. Swear to God, it said, when I went to class next week. It told me to tell the teacher that I had seen it. Pat called the being Mr. Button Nose, due to its appearance. She told the teacher, but he reacted in a nonchalant way, saying that yes, he knew about the beings, but said nothing further. Pat did make some great friends in the class. And for the first time, she felt like she found a group that she fit in. She had a series of past life dreams. She remembered being a servant in one life, which ended in an accidental drowning. In another lifetime, she was a Chinese soldier who died in a war. Later, Pat moved with another friend, Joanne, to central Louisiana, finally settling on the shores of Lake Hyatt near Grand Parish. On several occasions, she and Joanne saw strange lights over the lake. On the evening of November 13, 1985, Pat went to bed early. She had only been asleep a short while when she suddenly woke up. She was no longer in bed. Instead, to her complete shock, she was now wide awake, strangely calm, and standing on a flat area looking down a steep incline at what appeared to be a town or village of several thousand people. It appeared to be daytime, perhaps early morning. The village was filled with brightly painted stores and homes, and was just a few hundred yards away, divided by a small river. I didn't know where I was, Pat says, but I knew it wasn't the United States. The area looked lush and tropical, and reminded her of Mexico or South America. Suddenly a Mesoamerican-looking man about 5.5 feet tall with tightly curled black hair approached from behind her. Turning around, she saw a gigantic circular metallic craft. It was a couple of ridges from me. It had a big 100-foot-wide ramp going down on the left side, and was really bright. There were several other human-looking beings and some tall skinny greys. They were walking around the base of the ship, apparently making sure that the ground was stable. The short, dark-skinned man, who Pat now believes was probably an ET, began to lead Pat down the mountain and into the village. It was only a short distance. Somehow, Pat was made to understand that she and the man were on a mission to retrieve certain people from the village. Some kind of disaster was ready to happen, Pat says, but I didn't know what it was. We went down across the little stream, to this store. We went up the stairs on the side and woke the people up, a man and a woman. They had a brand new baby a few weeks old, and another child about 3. And we took them with us. And then we went about getting other people and bringing them back to this UFO. We gathered many people. And they were filling the bottom area of the UFO with people that they wanted from this city. I was in the lower part of this thing. It had about a 16-foot column that ran up the middle of it, and a white railing around it. They were putting them in that lower area. They made several trips, until the object was almost filled with people. They picked up anybody they could, or anybody who would follow us up there, and put them in the bottom couple of decks. It had a lot of different decks, and we packed these people in. Pat was then taken to the upper level of the craft. She saw that there was another craft further upstream. The lower level was so bright that it hurt her eyes. The upper level had a more pleasing illumination. It was lit in a soft pink light that didn't hurt your eyes. There was a curving kind of wall that had a bank of all red lights. It looked like square boxes built into it where they could touch places on it. The crew on this thing looked just like us, except they were wearing blue jumpsuits. Pat estimates that there were about 30 ETs, both human-looking and greys, aboard the craft. All the human-looking ETs wore blue jumpsuits. Interestingly, they were of different races: white, black, Asian, and more. The two crafts stayed there, waiting for the mysterious disaster to occur. Suddenly there was a huge volcanic explosion. Shortly later, a huge flow of mud, rock, ice, trees, debris and dead bodies came hurtling down the riverbed. To Pat's amazement, the UFOs lifted up and hovered above the disaster scene, then came down in a falling leaf motion, and began scooping people from the mudflows and into the craft. When that first wave came, Pat explains, the craft, came back down. It changed the shape of the metal on the outside of this thing so that people who made it could actually hold onto it. It changed its outside metal configuration into a railing kind of thing, and a flat area where people could climb on. They collected these people. There were three waves, the first one being the worst. There was nothing left after that first one except some people that had made it to higher land. The object picked up people both before, during and after the disaster. Following the initial landing and wave of mud, the object came down twice, rescuing as many people as it could, the second time, saving people from the active mud flows, and the third time, picking up only a few remaining survivors who had made it to higher ground. Pat cannot explain why the ETs had brought her there, or why she was so docile and obedient. The people who were being rescued were also very obedient, following Pat and the ETs without question. They followed us back like sheep, Pat says. Nobody put up an argument. They picked up thousands of people between the two of the UFOs. At some point during the experience, Pat was exploring the interior of the UFO and wandered over to the central column. She saw a small concavity in the column and reached out to touch it. When I did touch it, says Pat, it shocked the crap out of me. She was immediately approached by one of the ETs, a black woman, who told her to go ahead and touch it again. Pat refused, but the woman insisted. It's not my job, Pat said. And if it's not my job, I'm not going to do it. The woman finally stopped pestering her. The last thing she remembers is being escorted off the UFO by the beings in the blue jumpsuits. As the ramp opened and she began to walk out, one of the tall greys asked her, "Do you know what your gift is?" Pat had no idea, and feeling stupid because she didn't know, she said flippantly, "If you're so smart, why don't you tell me?" The being did not reply, but Pat had the distinct impression that it was amused. "I don't know how to explain that. It didn't smile, but I think inside it was laughing at me." The next thing Pat knew, it was the next morning. Upon awakening, she instantly recalled what had happened. It was another one of her UFO dreams. Except in this case, she would soon have proof it wasn't a dream. That morning, she called and told her best friend about her incredible dream. Her friend was confused. "Again?" she asked. "What do you mean?" Pat asked. Her friend explained that Pat had called her yesterday morning, reporting the same exact dream. Didn't she remember? Why was she repeating herself? Pat had no memory of this at all. She remembered only the dream from this morning. Her friend said, it didn't matter, that she should go and turn on the news. Pat went to the television and turned it on. It was to be one of the biggest shocks of her life. Several of the channels were covering the same story. The Nevado del Ruiz volcano in Colombia, South America had just erupted, completely obliterating entire villages over a wide area, covering them in mud, and killing an estimated 23,000 people. The town Pat had seen was called Armero, and was in a direct path of the volcano. Pat burst into tears. As she watched the footage, she recognized the area, and the disaster scene. She had been there. It wasn't a dream at all. It really happened. What happened to all those people? They couldn't have been returned to Earth? It truly upset me, says Pat. It was horrid. This wall of human beings, houses, dead animals, huge chunks of ice bigger than a house. I never wanted to look. It really disturbed me. All those dead people, it was horrible, terrible, so much death. All of this came down and took those cities right off the planet. And they, the ETs, took thousands of people, and they weren't bringing them back. And who would miss them? She was in shock. She was so shaken up by the event that she went to a therapist. She spoke with him for some time before revealing the source of her anxiety. To her surprise, the man explained that he had worked as a psychiatrist for the Pentagon for his entire career, and that he had heard many similar stories of UFOs. She got along well with the doctor, and the visits were definitely beneficial. But before long, it became clear that he was benefiting more from their visits than she was. There was a biofeedback machine in the doctor's office, and she repeatedly impressed him with her ability to make the readout go down to 5 or lower, sometimes even 0. "How do you do that?" he asked her. "I don't know," she replied. Another time she had an out-of-body experience and found herself at the therapist's home. The therapist's wife was screaming in pain. Pat woke up. Even though it was only 5 a.m., she called him up and said, "You need to take your wife to the hospital." "Oh, Pat," he said, not even questioning how she knew, "hang up the phone. We're on our way." During one session, the doctor asked her to read his aura, which she did. On another visit, she informed her doctor that his office manager and her son, who he had just hired, were embezzling funds from his company. She told him it was about $30,000 so far. At her next appointment, her therapist revealed that she was right. He had just fired them both. It was during one of their last meetings that he admitted his own belief in UFOs and the paranormal, and that in his work for the Pentagon, such subjects often came up. More psychic events continued. On July 16, 1987, Pat had a dream about a bus filled with school children plunging into a river. The next day, the Guadalupe River in Texas experienced a flash flood. A school bus filled with children plunged into the river. 10 children were killed. "Why do I wind up at disaster sites?" Pat asks. "It's like my job, I don't know." However, it was only a short time later that she had an encounter which she remembered almost entirely. She came down with pneumonia, and it worsened to the point where she was laboring for each breath. Pat had a dread fear of hospitals and didn't want to seek medical treatment. Finally, realizing her life was in danger, she went to the doctor. She was diagnosed with Legionnaire's pneumonia and was given penicillin. The doctors were surprised that she was still alive. "You should be dead," they told her. Her condition wasn't improving, so she was put in the hospital and given N4. They gave her a battery of blood tests and X-rays. After a short stay in the hospital, she was sent home to continue her recovery. The hospital called her and said that the hilum of her lungs was enlarged, and they suspected she had lung cancer. She needed to return for further tests, and a biopsy. Pat was extremely upset, and didn't want to have the surgery. It was about 1 week later when the Greys arrived. "I woke up floating out of bed with them." "Don't be scared," the Greys said. "We're not going to hurt you." "They always say that," Pat says, "and they never have." So, I open my eyes and I'm lying on a table. There's a light hurting my eyes. There were 6 Greys surrounding the table, 3 on each side. "The problem is in your right lung," one of the Greys said. "It is potentially serious, and we're going to fix it." Pat felt concerned. This wasn't even a hospital, she thought. How sanitary could it be? She closed her eyes and tried to relax. She opened her eyes and the being told her to breathe in. "So, I took in a breath," says Pat, "and it was like being in a swimming pool, and sucking up a whole bunch of water up to my nose. And I went ballistic. You didn't fix anything, she thought. You're hurting me. Be quiet. One of the tall greys said. That's enough out of you. The next thing Pat knew, it was morning. Her best friend, who knew of her condition, insisted Pat go back to the hospital and at least get an X-ray. Pat agreed. I went in there, and it was gone. Nothing was there. Pat was relieved. She now believes the ETs cured her. These beings are very tall and skinny, long fingers, little tiny nose, little wannabe mouth, long necks, really light skin. They're not frightening to me. I'm not scared of them. I've never been scared of them. Most of Pat's encounters have been positive and benevolent. During one of her encounters in her mid-40s, she was taken to an observation deck looking down on the Earth from an extremely high altitude. Pat, who suffers from an intense fear of heights, was not happy. I do not like heights, she says. We were standing on an observation deck, and I was about to puke and shit at the same time. There was a gray on each side of me, but I couldn't turn my head and look. I couldn't move. All I could do was look straight ahead and down at what they were showing me. But they were showing me the Earth with no water left on it. It was like a coming preview of this planet. I don't know how we could get rid of all the water. On another occasion, Pat found herself on board a craft and taken to what was apparently the control room. Looking through a screen or window, she saw that they were hovering over New York City. In less than a second, the craft was now hovering over Los Angeles, and then back over New York. How do you do that? She asked. The gray did it again. In the blink of an eye, they went to Los Angeles, hovered for a few seconds, and then snapped back to New York. Do you understand? One of the grays said. Yeah, she told them, thinking of Star Trek and the transporter beam. You can disassemble all the elements and reassemble it. No, one of the grays replied, you don't have it right yet. It repeated the same cross-country maneuver for a third time, traveling between New York and Los Angeles. Then it put the answer in my head, Pat says. I got it, she told the ETs. The answer amazed her. Expand and contract space, is what it told me, explains Pat. They have the ability to expand and contract space. They don't have a propulsion system like you would think, an engine or a motor. It's not the object itself, it's the space around it that they move. Another encounter was so bizarre and incredible, that she hesitates to reveal it. They took me underground somewhere, where the pyramids are, she says. Egypt. I was in this pyramid, and I was waiting for someone. I'm down at the bottom of the ramp, and this woman shows me a being, one of the tall skinny ones. It was tall and slender, big eyes, big head, long body. It walked down the ramp to where I was. I thought how beautiful it was when it was walking down. It was an awesome, beautiful being. When it got down there, I looked into its eyes. I had this horrible embarrassment. I couldn't tell what was me and what was it. It was like I couldn't separate what was me and what was this being. It was really confusing. I couldn't tell the difference between me and her. It was like we were the same person, and I felt horribly embarrassed. The beautiful tall gray led Pat down a corridor into a large subterranean chamber. It opened into this big cavern, like a big monstrous cave, an underground city. The floor was covered in these 6 by 6 foot beautiful burgundy tiles. There was an opening across that cave, and you could look down on a city. The being led her across the tiled chamber to the opening and into the underground city area. There were lots of UFOs down there, Pat says. There was other stuff there. And here was a huge column made out of crystal or glass. It's like it had caged lightning in it, like a power source. I got further down to the ground level. Suddenly one of the UFOs rose up. There was a loud bang as it dove into the rock wall. It crashed. Pat shouted, alarmed. The being told her, what is an obstacle for you is not an obstacle for us. Pat realized then that the craft had actually moved through solid rock, out of that secret chamber. She doesn't remember anything else. This was somewhere in the desert in Egypt, she says. I know what that sounds like. One of her later encounters occurred in her mid-50s. Pat had gone to bed one evening and woke up aboard a UFO. It was huge inside, Pat says, and along the wall it had these tables and seats. They said, go sit, so that's what I did.